another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.
From the intersection of technology and public accounting,
it's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession. Tech2Go is sponsored by ADP.
Welcome to Tech2Go. This is Greg LaFollette. Before we begin today's episode, I'd like everybody to know that today the recording quality on today's show suffered in that panelist Randy Johnston was calling in from an airport lounge and just plain had a poor connection. We didn't realize while we were recording how bad it was. I've done everything we can to clean it up. Rescheduling was simply impossible. It is a good, solid discussion, and hopefully you will find it valuable, although Randy is occasionally difficult to hear, and I apologize in advance. I want you to know that we understand that it doesn't meet our quality standards, and our other podcasts are all much higher quality. So that said, please stay tuned and continue as we record Tech2Go. Hello, Greg LaFollette for Intersection Live, the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly recurring podcast series. Today we're recording Tech2Go. Tech2Go is our original foray into the podcast world, and today we're recording episode 16. So we've been around for a while, 16 months we've been doing this with. I have all of the original crew here, all the guys who decided early on to join me in launching what was then the only podcast in serving the professional tax and accounting community in the technology world, and is still may be the only, I don't know, but I've got three of the country's leading experts, three contributing columnists to the CPA Technology Advisors, and I want to welcome all three of them there. My first guest is out on the West Coast. My friend Brent Goodfellow is a practicing CPA, a former president of the Oregon Society, a technologist who's got all kinds of initials behind his name and a really unique ability to explain fairly complex technological things, and he is a very technical guy, but he can explain them so well that even I can understand them sometimes, and that's a real talent. Brent, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, thanks for taking the time. I know that you've got an office full of accountants out there that are grinding out tax returns, probably out there doing them for some of your old clients that still think that you have to do their tax return, right?
I do. I have to have an opportunity to feel the pain of my fellow practitioners.
Right. Well, that's exactly why I'm sitting here in an accountant's office too. I love the smell of tax returns in the spring. Our middle of the country representative, Randy Johnston. I every time I go to introduce Randy, I feel humbled because no matter what I say, it's certainly not good enough. This is a guy who has a reputation, a well-deserved reputation in the profession for being Mr. Technology. He's helped more firms and more people understand what they need to know about what technologies to invest in and how to take advantage of them than certainly anybody that I'm aware of. And Randy, you've been doing it for a very, very long time. Somebody told me 35 years, and you must have started when you were 8, right?
I wish I'd have only been 8, but that's pretty accurate, actually.
Well, thank you very, very much for taking the time. And I know you actually scheduled a couple of airline flights so that you could join us. So when you hear the gal in the World Club announce that the next flight is leaving, that's just Randy's flight. The rest of you don't have to run off to get on an airplane. So, and thanks very much for taking the time for us this afternoon, Randy.
Pleased to be with y'all.
Our last regular panelist, my friend Dave McClure, out in Eastern Time Zone. David spends a lot of time, as we've talked about before, a lot of time watching the internet, and I think that internet thing, David, is going to catch on. What do you think?
You know, sooner or later it's got to. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I think it's here to stay. If you guys can just keep the pipes open, you know, we'll be doing very, very well. We'll talk a little bit more as we get into some of the things. Sometimes when we get going, you certainly help a lot with some of the background that you have over on the cell phone side and on the web infrastructure side. Some pretty interesting stuff. And the nice thing about having you on the panel is that I never have to worry about what your opinion is, David. It's always fairly obvious.
I wear it on my sleeve.
Well, you know, you're the world's expert on your opinion, right?
Yeah, absolutely right.
Okay. Well, in our last episode, when we recorded our last episode, there was the day that we recorded that, there was some interesting news that floated out that day, and we want to go in and cover. We've got four or five things to talk about today. Before we get into those, I got a couple of things I'd like to do before I turn it over to the experts here. I want to first thank our sponsor, ADP. They're kind enough to help us pay the bandwidth bills, and we sure appreciate the guys at ADP and their you know, great payroll products. And we'll talk a little bit more about them later. I've got a couple of things I want to tell you about, some things that they do, but I think they have some real foresight in sponsoring our maiden voyage into podcast land. So we'd sure appreciate it if you'd mention to them that you're one of our listeners, that will help us continue to bring the podcast to you. A second thing is, if you are a new listener, as the guys are talking today and we're sharing names of products and websites and things like that, don't fret. We try to keep a good solid list of show notes. You can as soon as you listen to this, you can go to cpata.com or cpatechadvisor.com. Both get you the same place, obviously. Front and center there's a button for Intersection Live, and pull up this particular podcast, and there's a set of show notes there that include all the proper spelling, all the websites, all the hyperlinks to everything that we've talked about, so you don't have to worry about scribbling something down at the at an inopportune moment. You can just kind of keep driving or keep running on your treadmill or whatever it is that you happen to be doing, and not worry about trying to remember something or back up and re-listen to it. So just remember that we do have show notes. Remember to tell the guys at ADP that we appreciate them. And finally, if you've got any thoughts, criticisms, congratulations, constructive criticism or just plain criticism, be sure to give us a call. We maintain a voicemail box. The number is 800-456-0864, and our extension is 2106. And those are fun to get. Occasionally we just pull them up and put them right into the show. Sometimes we get questions, and those are fun. Finally, we record live on TalkShoe, as we are today. We have a couple of guests. We have a guest that we'll bring in a little later on today. As we visit, we're going to talk a little bit about this new proposed IRS Section 7216 regulation that's got everybody kind of scratching their heads about what that means. So we've got a special guest to talk about that. There's a couple of other people here, and sometimes it's kind of fun to bring somebody in and visit with them a little bit. So with that said, let me get back to our news story. Microsoft went out and bought, and Microsoft buys a lot of companies. In fact, there's a whole spot, a whole website dedicated just to Microsoft acquisitions. And they went out last week and bought a company called Kadaro. And they're kind of a desktop virtualization system, but as I understand it, a little higher up. Now, Randy, you've been talking about virtualization for a long, long time, and I'm sure you knew about these guys. What do they do, and how does that fit in with what Microsoft's doing?
Well, Greg, it's really, to me, a strategic initiative that's going on here, and I want to frame it because where we're headed next is the Windows Server 2008 conversation that Brett's going to lead for us, and I'm excited about that. And this is the last piece that I perceived was missing in the Windows Server virtualization stack and application stack to make everything work right. And yes, we've been promoting virtualization since the late 90s. Here's the concept, and here's why I think it's important. There's multiple types of virtualization that can be done. You can do virtualization on servers, which allows you to run the applications, multiple applications on a single server easily at the same time. And in fact, if we do it right, we can actually have fewer servers running these applications, which gives us actually higher speed, more reliability, and so forth. So server-based virtualization is a big thing. I support that wholeheartedly. The next step, in my opinion, is the move over to desktop virtualization. And most of the major competitors now have a desktop virtualization approach. The competitor here of VMware has a desktop virtualization approach. The Citrix folks bought ZenSource to do a desktop virtualization approach.
Randy, go back and tell me, what was the name of the product?
The first one is VMware.
Well, right. The second one
Second one is the Citrix vendor, who's typically been an add-on for terminal services. They bought a product called ZenSource.
Spell that.
X-E-N.
Oh, okay. I've seen that, sure.
Yeah. And see, that's an important deal because this summer, the Citrix folks will release their desktop virtualization. And then finally, this tool that Microsoft bought, the Kadaro tool, is one of these desktop virtualization players. Now, what it does for you is it allows you to take the equivalent of your PC and package it up and run it virtualized if you so choose. So it can be run on a server. It can be run on an individual piece of hardware, a laptop or a desktop. And then the other piece that all three vendors now have in place is the ability to run your entire computer off of a USB or pen drive. So conceptually, you can think of your desktop as existing up in a cloud, up in the sky, where you can run all of your applications from anywhere, and you no longer have a dependency on your local computer. You can really carry everything that you need in the world on a stick. And from a maintenance and deployment vantage point, you've now got this farm or pool of resources that can be used.
So, Randy, does that mean that using something like the Kadaro product, I take my, for example, my laptop, and I wrap that all up just the way it sits right now, and I create almost like a ghost image of it, and then I can launch that as a virtual machine, say, off of a desktop machine or something?
Off of a desktop or off of a server or off
sure.
of a USB drive.
Okay.
So it gives us those alternate methods of deployment, if you will, and what the vendors who have these products now can do is actually launch applications as virtual machines. So it's a long step here, but it's not that far off. What I think it does for us is it eliminates the need for terminal services as we know it today. Because with this technology in place, we no longer have to have that remote access without all the capabilities. We've got a
Well, I think it expands on the options that an accounting firm has for implementing the use of technology. Obviously, for a firm that does a lot of auditing, you know, they're going to have the ability to take this desktop virtualization and easily implement it in the field, you know, where they're doing their audits, that kind of thing. And maybe they're going to avoid some of the licensing policies of some of the accounting software vendors that have to do specifically with virtual servers. Now, they could obviously change their policies, but at least some of them charge additional for terminal server environment where their software is loaded, you know.
Right. But doesn't it get almost impossible now to figure out for these companies to enforce those licensing policies technically?
Well, actually, that's where this comes in and makes it, I think, a lot more practical. It's particularly with Citrix ZenSource, and Kadaro has the same capability, and to a lesser degree, VMware has the same capability. You can actually just buy a pool of licenses, if you will, and, you know, let's just say there's 35 users in the firm, and you know no more than 20 get on a particular application at one time. You can actually have a pool of licenses, and then when that application is needed, it's basically checked out from the pool, checked back in.
Sure.
So this named user licensing is the thing that gets more at risk here, but all the automation is in place. And the other key thing to know on this desktop virtualization and USB virtualization and so forth is it's all encrypted, so everything's locked up. And, you know, in prior sessions of this podcast, we've talked about the need for encryption and security, and this makes it pretty much automatic. Plus, we're no longer dependent on a particular configuration of desktop or laptop or whatever. That's all provided for us. So if you start thinking it through and say, gee, the hardware doesn't matter anymore because it's completely abstracted, now we can really build these master images of audit or master images of tax.
Right.
Or, as we've talked in prior sessions, we can have these application appliances, and when we need to run an engagement manager, we launch it, and we have that in a virtualized environment.
Right.
This is a whole new way to go after these applications, but I think it is the way that will be the way of the future. And it's pretty obvious from a Microsoft perspective, this is the way Ozzy would like to have a lot of these applications designed. Quote, the web is the way, and synchronization is the way when you think about his heritage from Lotus Notes.
So, David, do you think this stuff is ready for prime time in small firms, or is it still a little too abstract for Main Street America?
No, actually, you know, obviously there are benefits to the larger firms because they struggle daily with not only licensing issues, but also the issue of what you do with the executive who has his own favorite piece of hardware at home, and how do you wrench around to configure a laptop for someone who wants something non-standard. So all of that, obviously, to the large firm, but to the small firm, this is the next logical step in use of the web. You know, for a large firm, you can talk about terminal services. For the smaller firm, they're still struggling with issues of how to get access with the go-to-my-PC kinds of software that let them get back to their home computer if they need to. This eliminates that, and I think it does so in a fairly cost-effective manner. Not that difficult a learning curve. Granted, there is some, but not that difficult a learning curve. Access to your software anytime, anywhere. I think there are some clear benefits to the smaller accounting firm.
So these kinds of things, the virtualization kinds of products, give me access to my programs from wherever I might be. What about my data? How does that part work, Brent?
Well, there's tons of questions in my mind, you know, about this desktop virtualization piece. And, you know, Dave talks about it's going to be cost effective. You know, obviously cost effective means different things to different people, but I can't wait to hear what the cost is going to be for this. And as far as programs and data, if they reside on a server somewhere, the question is, you know, how do you wrap those up and take them with you? And if you make changes while they're away, how do you sync that up? I mean, there's still lots and lots of questions associated with the whole mobile desktop kind of a technology that we're talking about here. The third thing that just scares me to death as a network admin is how do we manage this? And, you know, we used, when we did the Server 08 launch, we used a quote from Tom Bittman, who's a Gartner VP analyst last year, and he said, virtualization without good management is more dangerous than not using virtualization in the first place. And so I think there's a lot more information that we need to get in terms of how our network administrator is going to be able to manage all of this virtualization muscle, so to speak, and make sure that we don't have, data that's not synced up, so to speak. And that could be really dangerous for accounting firms.
Right.
And Brent, your view on that, I think, is actually in the right zone. This is new. This is not something I would want you to do in 2008. But I'm going to tell you that I think by 2009, it'll be in pretty good shape. And the Windows Server 2008 approach on this, it's this integration seamlessly all the way up and down. So conceptually, if you can just say, all the data basically lives on the servers, as do all the applications, and all we really do is this, and I'm going to call it magic sync, because it's going to be a little bit like that. When we're disconnected, we'll work in our own environment. When we reconnect, that part of the synchronization is the tricky part, but that's the part that, you know, Ozzy and team have done so well from the notes environment, and that's part of what we're inheriting here. So if you just think of it as a way to package up everything and carry it with you, you're there.
You know, Randy, you said a magic thing there when you talk about the firms that have IT managers and things, and that's great for the firms of, you know, 20 or so people that have, you know, a full-time IT person floating around. The vast majority of firms are little teeny guys, and they practice public accounting all day long, and then they try to manage their network and their technology at night and on weekends. And, you know, we see these guys all the time. And they're the guys that come into the classroom when you're speaking, Randy, and they hang on every word because they're trying to figure out what the heck to do. And I think what I hear you saying is pay no attention to the man behind the curtain for right now. Is that what I hear you saying?
To a degree, that is. And see, for the little tiny firms, I see this as being a great liberator, because the complexities all wind up in an appliance, in the servers, if you will. And in small firms, if we can really have two servers virtualized so we can have a complete failure of one and still run completely off the other, well, we can have all our applications prepackaged by the manufacturers, and it's all headed that way. And then alternatively, if we don't want to have that infrastructure at all in-house, it's now fairly trivial to run hosting centers that have this stuff for us. So not far off from what the Thompson Virtual Office has done for so many people, where there really is no infrastructure, this
right.
Lets us have the entire infrastructure abstracted. So we can just worry about practicing accounting, and we're not maintaining servers and applications and da-di-da-di-da. So that's the promise of where that's headed. And it's exactly what happened in the mainframe environment, you know, years ago, and it's now being replicated over into the PC environment. So now it's a matter of the technology working itself out, but this is simpler and easier and cheaper.
You know, it seems to me, Randy, there's actually one more thing. You know, we have the applications, and then we have the data, and that's what Brent was talking about, those two different things. But if you're going to go out right now and live in the virtual office world, I use a small V and small O, as opposed to the trade name that the Thompson guys have, it's great if you could have all of the applications that you want to have come from one spot. But that's so far, that's not happening. Now there's also technology out there. Microsoft has made some acquisitions in this world that would that will allow you to run those, I'll call them virtual applications, from your machine, regardless of, so you don't, you're not going to go to one place to get all of your applications. You're going to go to one server to get one application and another server to get another application, and it's all completely transparent to you as a user. You don't care where it comes from.
I was just going to say, I think that that's probably going to be what we're going to see when this Kadero product gets implemented as a desktop, a virtualized desktop on a thumb drive. I think that's going to be the base desktop, and we're going to be seeing the SoftGrid application in action on the server side, maintaining, you know, the application and perhaps data files as well.
Yeah, see, Britt, you're dead on with that, because this was the enabling piece that Microsoft needed for SoftGrid, and it was the thing that, you know, the Citrix folks had started to solve about a year ago, and the VMware folks had started to solve about a year ago. And in my theory, it's probably actually led to some of the VMware price drops in shares, because as the investors look at this and say, these three players have equivalent parts, now we've got a fight before there was still this missing element.
So it's going to be an interesting ride for the next year or 18 months, because Microsoft actually bought that, was that Softricity? That was not the SoftGrid product name?
Yes.
That's correct.
Right. Then that's been, a year ago, Brent?
A little longer than that, I think, like about 18 months ago.
Right.
Something like
so
that.
we haven't really seen anything happen there, so they're just kind of merrily going on their way, acquiring these things, and you'll see them kind of get blended together and come out in a release of something down the road sometime, huh?
Well, it's interesting, because if you look at one of the popular websites for hardware is a site called Tom's Hardware site. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yeah, Tom's good.
But it's interesting what he said about Kadero. He saw the Kadero acquisition as a way for Microsoft to generate interest in moving to the Vista operating system. So, you know, his view was this is only going to be available on Vista and maybe whatever the next desktop OS is after Vista. In other words, it's not going to be available with XP. And so if you want to take advantage of this technology, you're going to have to move. And that was kind of his take on this thing.
Yeah, and, you know, one more piece to kind of put in the flavor here to give you something that's in late beta and headed for real time is like the Shared View Microsoft product. Because that particular technology, which allows this magic synchronization in these workspaces, is very interesting and also kind of a part of all this server application desktop play. So, you know, if once tax season is done or you're having your IT teams look at this, the Shared View application is worth taking a run on.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I've been doing this a long time, and this is so like deja vu of what happened when, you know, we got into the browser wars, you know, and when we got into the network operating system wars long time ago, when if you went to buy a copy of Windows NT, it was on the bottom shelf and it was all dusty, you know, or the Office wars of a few years ago. Now, essentially, this is virtualization wars, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this thing, because VMware has really owned the virtualization market literally for years, and Microsoft did make an attempt to acquire VMware, which was flatly turned down by the VMware folks.
Well, let's keep this keep an eye on this, guys, and as it starts to mean a little bit more to the average practicing tax and accounting professional, let's come back and talk about it some more. I think our next item is probably something that's still maybe a little bit out for in terms of what accounting firms are going to do, but certainly not nearly as far. There will be firms this summer rolling out Server 2008, and I know that that we just had the launch on that a week or two ago. And Brent, you were a big part of that. You and Steve Ballmer did that pretty much hand in hand, right?
No, not even close. I was one of a handful of certified trainers who participated in a 24-hour virtual launch presentation. Essentially, it was a web-based presentation on not just Windows Server 2008, because the other new products that are launched, at the same time, Visual Studio 2008, which is more for developers, SQL Server 2008, which is obviously applies to accountants, but more on the back end. And we also talked about the Microsoft Official Distance Learning Program, what's referred to as Modal, which is a very interesting and new way to learn Microsoft technologies.
And so, tell me a little bit about your experience in this thing. That was kind of your first time at a Microsoft launch, or?
No, I participated in the Vista launch. That was not a virtual launch, though. That was up in Seattle. Although these launch events, you know, they travel around the world, I just happened to end up at the Seattle launch, which was the one that it's closest to me, although they had one in Portland as well. But it was interesting to go to Seattle when they launched Vista because, you know, Bill was there, it's so close to the Redmond campus that a lot of the Microsoft execs were there, and that was just a really interesting place to be.
Sure.
The thing that I did in conjunction with the launch, just because I wanted to have the experience, was we took the time to build a Windows Server 2008 machine with this hypervisor. Now, hypervisor was not part of the launch and won't be available until, according to Microsoft, 180 days post-launch. So sometime between the end of February and the end of July is when the hypervisor product is going to be available. But it is available in beta. And we wanted to see kind of how this, in a practical environment, how this was going to work. So you hear a lot about theory and how it's supposed to work, but it's a whole different story when you start loading it on a piece of hardware and playing with it a little bit, and that's what we did. And it was a very, very interesting experience. We took an Intel S5000 motherboard and a couple of quad-core processors. We put 16 gigs of memory in this particular machine, and we loaded Windows Server 2008 with Hyper-V, and the Hyper-V is in beta on this machine. And the first thing that we did is we started building a couple of virtual machines just to see what kind of resource pull we were going to have. The first machine we built was a production SharePoint server that we use in the firm. It was SharePoint 2003. We pulled an image of that machine and restored that image to a virtual machine on this virtual host that we built. We were just blown away with the ease that image went into a virtual environment and the pretty significant performance gains that we got. Now, granted, the SharePoint 03 box that we pulled the image from is about a five-year-old box, so it's older hardware, but we did an in-place upgrade from SharePoint 03 to SharePoint 07, again in a virtual environment. And since that time, we've built a 64-bit Windows Server 2003 Office Communications server as a virtual machine on that virtual host as well. So to date, we have two virtual servers running on that single host, and I'm sitting here looking at the resource pull right now, and with those two virtual machines, those two virtual servers, if you will, in production on two quad-core processors, the processor utilization is somewhere between 2 and 5%. And the 16 gigs of memory, we're using about 5.5 gigs of that. And that's with the host and these two other servers that are running.
So does that mean that it's a whole new paradigm? I thought the rule was every time we got new releases of software, we had to buy bigger, faster machines with more memory. And you're saying that that's not true anymore, huh?
Well, obviously, for a virtual host, you know, memory is going to be the biggest thing that you have to be concerned about.
Sure.
And if you're going to run a virtual host, the requirement is that it has to have this Intel or AMD V chip. So it has to be there has to be hardware support for virtualization in both the processor and the motherboard. And we actually this was a gotcha for us when we were building this device, because when we went to install our first virtual machine, it told us that the hardware wasn't properly configured, and we had to go into the BIOS of the motherboard and turn that virtualization piece on, and it was not on by default before we could install our first virtual machine.
So is this Hyper-V product, is this something that accountants are going to care about, or only the highly technical IT manager type people are going to care about?
Well, I think accountants are going to care about it if we're talking about a firm that already has multiple servers. If we have a firm that's really small, maybe they don't have a server at all, or they have maybe a single server, it's going to be less important to those folks, I suppose, although there are a number of other compelling reasons to consider virtualization, even if you don't have multiple servers. For example, you've automatically got a situation where you can build in some redundancy, some continuity, if you will, some disaster recovery. And those things are important to firms that have a single server. You've also got the ability with virtualization to have a testing environment. And I would think that would be important even to a smaller firm. So when I say that generally small firms are not going to be interested in this, there are some other reasons to consider virtualization.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, Brad,
well,
if I can jump in on that conversation.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for the background there. But to small firms, I think the virtualization is critical in that you get the redundancy, and reality is you can run all the applications you need on no more than two machines in concept. So if your imaging system requires a SQL server, or your engagement manager requires a separate server and so forth, that really is a big advantage, I think. So sorry about that background on that.
Yep, no, but that's fine. Somebody needs it to get on a plane. That's what's important.
So, but you know, when you think about it that way, I'm really picturing these small firms that have been faced with having to buy 2, 3, 4 servers. And I really can't imagine that most firms of, let's say, 35 people or less have the need to buy more than 2 servers. And if we virtualize things right, we can lose an entire server and run the entire firm off of 1 server for a short period of time.
Sure.
So I'm not trying to overstate that case, but I know in the VMware environment, that's absolutely true. You can basically get somewhere between 8 to 12 servers virtualized into one physical machine. And my expectation is that Hyper-V, as that gets tuned up, will have similar characteristics. So the days of buying more than 2 servers for most CPA firms should be passed, and we get some business continuity advantage in the process. And it's a minor thing, but we get some energy savings in the process too.
Sure.
Because this hypervisor virtualization thing actually allows the servers to go into a sleep state in between processing cycles. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but if we can keep a server shut down for a fraction of a second, we can save serious amounts of energy over
sure.
time.
Well,
every
little bit helps
just,
there.
I was just going to add there that it's interesting, even if you pull the virtualization piece out, this is, again, one of the pieces of information we used in the launch. Server 08 uses 8% less power than its equivalent Windows Server 03. So this is based on a standard transaction processing performance benchmark, but the Server 08 operating system uses 8% less power. And most data centers say that well over 40% of their costs are just in power alone. So that's pretty significant that a piece of software cuts your power by 8%.
And
interesting.
To watch on that, Greg, is it's, you know, we don't worry about energy costs too much, but that same thing is being put in Vista and is actually in. So if we run the new generation of desktop and server software, we actually cut our power use everywhere.
Yep. Let's drop the Server 2008 stuff. We're gonna come back, and obviously next month we will again talk about the one portion of Server 2008, as Brent's been doing for us month by month as we go through, and we've got a couple of other things to talk about. I do want to take just a second to tell you about a couple of things that the ADP thing people are doing, and I want to point out to our listeners a couple of things that are over on the ADP site. These guys have done a lot of things to help practicing public accountants, and we talk about this every once in a while. They've got a bunch of calculators over there. These are the things that, I mean, if you're, I would just give you a hint, if you've got some sort of calculation that you need to do that's got almost anything to do with payroll, ADP's got a calculator over there. They're free. They're easy to work with. They do a nice little actually client ready kind of a report, little printouts, little flow charts to give them the answer to, you know, calculate a paycheck or a W-4 or a 401k planners. The one that I actually was working with an accountant and we ended up using the ADP calculator for employee stock option. What is the after-tax value of a non-qualified option? And if you don't do those a lot, like I don't, it's an interesting kind of a calculation, and these guys have got it all laid out, and we found that thing, and bam, there it was, and looked like heroes, and it was kind of interesting, you know. So the things like that, the calculators, and in every form in the entire world that's got anything to do with payroll is over there. So all the federal and state and local unemployment and withholding and all of that stuff. If you need something like that, pop over to ADP.com, and you can find them all there. Thanks to those guys for continuing to sponsor us. Our next thing we want to spend a few minutes, David, I told you we could spend a few minutes talking about printers. And I know you've got a real passion for this. I just read your column that'll be in an upcoming magazine. You talked about this a little bit. Talk to me about what your heartburn is in the printing world here these days.
Well, I think that the biggest problem that I have is that there are too many printers with too many features we don't need. The old business class of printer, like the venerable LaserJet 4, have virtually disappeared from the marketplace. And in their place, we have, first of all, virtually every company in the world that makes electronics is now churning out printers. And the interesting thing that caught my eye was a study by the American Consumer Institute late last year, that says, hey, this is a razor and razor blades kind of market gimmick, where they're literally giving away the printers for nothing, and you are paying through the nose for ink cartridges and replacements. So if you look at the printer market, particularly for an accounting office, you can be in for a very rough ride, especially if you fall for these very, very cheap. In the long run, you're going to pay more and not be happy with the results. So I looked at some of the things an accounting firm can do to protect itself. And one of the things that I find interesting, and it relates back to our previous two topics today, Greg, is how much we seem to be abandoning this idea that every desktop machine should be a server, and going back to the idea that, wait a minute, maybe a server, maybe even printers should be shared resources. What do you think?
Interesting. Interesting kind of an idea. So you don't think very much right now of these this idea of multi-function machines, right?
No, I don't like multi-function machines at all because, first of all, if you buy the machines separately, if in fact you really need them, you can oftentimes get a better machine at an equal or lower price. And the problem with the all-in-one machines is when one facet of them fails, you have to replace the whole machine. Very expensive in the long run, and there's a rule of thumb that says if it tries to be good at everything, it's probably good at nothing. And I believe that. The second thing is, I really think that most accounting offices need three different kinds of printers. You need a high-end color laser jet for the finished client presentations. You need a low-end color machine for doing drafts and lesser color documents. And you need a high-volume, churn-it-out laser jet to, or laser, I won't say laser jet because that's a brand name, and there are lots of others besides HP in this market, a laser machine that's capable of churning out high volume, low cost per copy kind of black and white pages. So those are the two things, and I really think any accounting firm of almost any size now needs all three. Fortunately, the prices are low enough you can afford them.
Sure. Opinion, guys, on factory cartridges for printers or the discount refilled ones, what do you think?
I personally haven't had great luck with the refilled option. I've used them both, and I think you have to be, if you're going to use the refilled option, you have to be really, really comfortable with whoever's providing those, because there's a lot of fly-by-nights out there.
I guess, Greg, the other thing I'd probably mention in that regard is almost nobody publishes any data on how many copies you get for the cartridges. So you can't compare from one printer to another, in most cases, what your actual costs are going to be without doing an awful lot of research. And it shouldn't be that difficult to do. You got to ask yourself, why are they hiding this information? Probably because they don't want you to know.
Right, right. Yeah, it's that's a tough deal, and I know lots of firms just go out. You know, you buy these these couple hundred dollar little inkjet printers, and they're actually not bad at all, except the printer costs $100 and the cartridge costs $80. You know, they're a little bit silly in terms of how that works. And Randy?
I think they deeply discount the cost of their printer to get you hooked on needing their ink.
Right.
Honestly,
right back to those razor blades that David was talking about.
Yep.
Randy, you get this question all the time, and what do you tell people? Well, we may have. I think we did. Well, as a matter of fact, we did lose Randy.
I just thought he didn't have an answer. I was a little stunned that he didn't have one.
Nope. It said Randy says the phone cut me off. He's coming back. So we'll have him back. We'll have him back in just a second. I thought it got awful quiet in that club or wherever he is. I don't even know what airport he's in. Let's pop over here, and we do have a guest that I want to bring in, and we want to talk a little bit about this new regulation. There's the new IRS regulation concerning Social Security numbers and our borders and things. And let me get Randy back. There's Randy. You're back now, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I'm going to bring, I've asked Stephen Ladd. Stephen is the CEO of Copanion, a relatively new vendor in our space. They have a product called Gruntworks. And Stephen is a student of what's happening in the the OCR and the scanning world. He's been around in it for a long, long time, and is watching this these proposed regulations, now commonly known as 7216. Been watching those fairly closely. Stephen, welcome. Thank you for taking some time to join us today.
My pleasure, Greg.
So do you want to take a stab, Stephen, at kind of framing this? What's the IRS trying to do? Do you have an understanding of the rationale for this, or where it comes from, and what it proposes to do?
Absolutely. The IRS is saying pretty simply that any tax preparer who outsources to a foreign country the preparation of a tax return needs to pay attention to some new rules. Now, you know, a lot of people are using offshore tax preparation as a safety valve during tax season for the staffing shortage that we all feel. And sometimes if it's a larger firm, it may be their own resources. And in smaller firms, they often use third-party providers that have resources, frequently in India, where you have trained accountants in another country who fill out and complete a large percentage of the tax return that's then reviewed and finalized here in the U.S. But under the new regulations, which go into effect January 1st of next year, two things need to be done by any tax preparer in the U.S. Under these regs. The first thing is they need to get written consent from their client in advance before they can send the return overseas, either directly or indirectly. And secondly, they need to mask or redact the Social Security numbers on all of the source documents and inside the tax preparation software before that information is sent overseas. So the IRS is saying very simply, under no circumstances can any information, any Social Security numbers on an information return be sent overseas as part of the tax preparation process. And as a result, it's creating quite a bit of concern amongst a lot of parties. We were talking, and we've actually been invited to talk to some of the larger tax software companies. We've talked to a number of large and small accounting firms, and in fact, to one of the outsourcing firms, who are saying, in essence, how are we going to do this? How are we going to make sure that we erase all those Social Security numbers off of the documents or the electronic version of those documents before they go overseas, because we need to be in compliance with this regulation in less than a year?
I know there's a lot of people concerned about this. Now, originally, the proposal looked like it did not include employees, which would mean that, that if PwC in the Chicago office was a little behind and they wanted to have somebody, in the Lisbon office help them out, that, if somebody was working internationally, that they could do that because they were employees. And now the service, the service is saying that's not true. Doesn't matter if it's an employee. Randy, do you have a read on that? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, actually, the last read that I have on it is the issue is employees count. So the deal is if the information leaves the borders, it has to be redacted. So when we think about many, many firms who have set up outsourcing and only employees overseas, obviously it affects the big four directly, but there's a lot of other pretty good-sized firms that have done the same strategy. These employees now fall under the restriction as well.
So let me give you a scenario. I work in a firm, and the firm provides VPN access to the tax preparation product. In fact, that's actually true. I'm sitting here in a firm. I can access the tax compliance software. I can review tax returns from home, and that's a very handy thing. And I like to do that from time to time. Now, if I get on an airplane and I fly to London, and I sign on to the internet, and I establish my VPN, and I review tax returns, has my employer just broken the law?
Under my current interpretation of what I understand, yes. And that's actually part of the issue here, because your VPN connection is, in my opinion, secure enough for that particular purpose. But, you know, to a degree, let's just call this an election year, and that's a political football that we could have enforced to show how strong we are. So I think the regulation is going to only be enforced for a year. But notice if we have this rather, I don't know how to say it, overwhelming or unrealistic enforcement strategy, it's going to be very disruptive to a number of firms in the 2009 calendar year.
Right. Right. Brent, any of your colleagues seeing this or caring about it?
Well, it seems like the ones that care the most about it are the ones that have been using outsourced services. But as Randy just indicated, you know, there may be some other things to be concerned about. And, you know, obviously we don't need to get too excited until we get something a little more final from the IRS in a more final form. But certainly I think all practitioners should be aware of what's there and what the potential ramifications could be for, just as you suggested, the mobile type tax preparer. Virtually every firm has some of those, you know.
Right, right. I look at it and go, well, first of all, my first alarm comes when I read the AICPA tax section actually appointed a task force to look at this, and they opined to the IRS because there's a period of public comment going on right now, and the institute opined, and they talked. When I read their letter, the first thing that I noticed, and I had to go back and check, and they're right. This is a criminal section. So, I mean, one of the first things the institute said was, you know, if you're going to make this, you know, if you're going to enforce this thing, this is civil. It's way more practical than making this a criminal behavior. I mean, that's pretty darn serious.
Yeah, and of course, unfortunately for many of the listeners, they won't have time to respond in the comment period, which is only through April 7th.
Right.
But, you know, I think some of the responses that I've read, it's like, you know, I'm kind of practical on this stuff, and this seems very draconian, way over the top. But, you know, I don't make the rules. I try to interpret them, and again, I'm not a lawyer on this particular front. So, you know, Brent's attitude about, well, we need a little bit of wait and see. But what I'd be concerned about is for firms that are using this for strategies that might even include bookkeeping services, which could have these type of numbers exposed,
right,
or audit services that shouldn't but could have these numbers exposed, all of a sudden all of those types of outsourcing facilities, well, they could be not legal.
Well, and if it's a, you know, I guess I could understand it if it were a jobs protection function, which I mean, I'm not even sure where this thing comes from, but I mean, I have worked on, if you've worked in a firm that does expat returns, You know, we regularly work with accountants in the ground country. You know, that, I mean, it's a very natural part of the process. I think we're solving a problem that really doesn't exist. Stephen, is this all politics? Does this go back to the stuff that John Kerry brought up 4 years ago in the presidential election?
Well, it's hard to say where it came from, because the proposed regulation started off a couple of years ago now, and it has changed quite a bit from the time it was originally proposed till the comments were made in April of was it last year or the year before, and now when they've issued. So there seems to be a real focus on the Social Security number, and some thoughts are that there may be trends in Washington where they're treating people's Social Security numbers, whether it be on tax forms today, they may be on HIPAA healthcare-related activities tomorrow. There may be an awful lot of things that they're essentially clamping down on the potential for identity theft. So I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people whose first question is the one that you just asked, though. Maybe it is. The problem is as a practitioner who is trying to find some time during tax season or allocate resources amongst his firm optimally, what are they going to do about it if the regulation stands as it currently is written?
Well, we need a technology solution. Is there one?
Well, that's frankly, it's a business that we're in. We think that we like to call the space tax document automation.
Right. We call that a softball, Steve.
Yes, it is. But there's several companies that have started this.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, people realized that if you scanned these images, well, obviously you could send them overseas for data entry manually over there.
Right.
But possibly you could use tools like OCR to try to read the image and then either organize the document, as you call it, scan and organize, or extract the data off the document and populate it into the tax return software, which you call scan and populate. And over the course of time, we think that these tools will improve dramatically. We have a role, we think, in doing that. But people have gone from a limited number of forms and a limited amount of functionality, say just organize, to over the course of time, a very large number of forms and a very large functionality, namely populate, with a high percentage of the numbers being right, possibly even better than a junior person might do within their firm. So we think that this is a technology trend that's well underway, that there will be multiple vendors trying very hard to solve this problem. We're one of them. And we're seeing a lot of excitement from customers to say, gee, I can save 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe someday an hour per return by letting technology do what otherwise I used to have to do late at night, or I had to hire some junior person or attempt to do during the season.
So, Steve, one of the things I like about your company and products approach is that the information is not leaving the shores, number one, and number two, it's abstracted in such a way it's protected kind of automatically. So there's a couple of natural benefits to your approach. And as I reflect on other vendors, in response to your question, Greg, about is there ways to, make this happen in products, that's where products like an Interwovens worksite has the redaction capability. But the thing is, we have to know that we're looking for that. And when you start looking at the outsourcing options, I think it turns you back towards companies like Copanion, who actually have an alternative to the outsourcing labor that's
right.
done through automation.
Well, and if you combine those two, Randy, there may be a spot for something like that redaction program for somebody like Copanion or the SurePrep product or the CCH scan product, whoever's going to do this. There's a whole bunch of players out there, but maybe those systems can simply, while they're hunting out everything else, just hunt out those social security numbers and automatically say this return is going to be dealt with offshore, so redact all the social security numbers. Is that trivial, Steve, or not?
Well, it's not as easy as it sounds. We've actually been doing it internally for about a year and a half. We are so concerned about security in our company that in addition to keeping all the documents in electronic form onshore, we also make sure we redact all the documents before our own people look at it to the maximum extent possible with technology. So this is what we're looking at right now is the question of can we take the technology which recognizes where all the Social Security numbers are and, for that matter, all the other numbers on a tax form, and can we be quite sure we're doing a good job of blacking out all the Social Security numbers? And we're assuming that this might be the beginning of a trend. Maybe the next step is to black out all the names and addresses also. So from our perspective, we've been working hard on this technology. It's certainly not an easy thing, because you want to do a very, very thorough job of it on whatever documents that are sent to you.
And Greg, your software point that you're asking there, if you think about the big publishers, the CCHs, the Thompsons, and so forth, presenting that software with that information blocked in the software, if you're going to have a remote user,
right.
That's a different level of problem. And your comment earlier about the expats, what do you do in that situation where you're really trying to work with that tax data? It gets to be a non-trivial problem.
Yep. I can't imagine that these things are going to go into force the way they were proposed. Don't even know why they got started. It is certainly something that we will keep watching, and we'll talk about as it moves down. By the time we record episode 17, which we will be recording on Wednesday, May 28th at 10:30 Central Daylight Time. So that's Wednesday, the 28th of May, for episode 17 of Tech2Go. The public comment period will have closed. We're recording this on the 20th of March, so The guys have kindly given me the month of April off. I'm headed to Brazil. Thanks for giving me the month off, guys. I appreciate it. And Stephen Ladd, I want to thank you very much for joining us from Copanion and for sharing with us some of your experience and expertise. We appreciate your coming and sharing with us. Thanks so very much.
My pleasure, Greg.
And guys, we are about at the end of our time. So I'm going to send each and all of you back to work with a hearty thank you once again for everything that you do for the CPA Technology Advisor and Intersection Live and the profession as a whole. Have a great remainder of busier season, and we will see you all. Visit with you on May 28th, and I'll probably see several of you at some of the first conferences and things that are coming up in May. There's some quite a bunch of them coming up fairly early in May this year. Randy, will you be at Sage Insights?
That is the plan. So I'm headed to the Upper Land in D.C.
Right, and I'll be there. And then there's a couple of Florida shows and the New Jersey show and lots of other things coming up. So, Mr. Brent Goodfellow out in Hillsboro, Oregon, thank you so very much for your time today. I appreciate you.
Very welcome.
David McClure, thanks again to you for your perspective and participation. You must have gone away already.
Yep, here I am. Sorry
okay.
about that. Wrong button. I said, as always, Greg, I really enjoy these.
Yeah, quit pushing those darn buttons. Okay, and Randy, again, thank you so very much for all the effort. I know it's tough in an airport. Travel safely, my friend.
Yep, you do the same. Travel safe and be happy.
That concludes episode 16 of Tech to Go for the CPA Technology Advisor and Intersection Live. I'm Greg LaFollette. Have a great day. Thanks.
That wraps up this edition of Tech to Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust. This has been a podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.